Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hey, Julia here. If you'd like to grow your agency with a new free traffic source, we've put together a free resource for you called the Agency Traffic Blueprint, which outlines how you can acquire free organic traffic for your agency's website using Powered by Marketing. You can get that at getrubyrobin.com/blueprint or check the description of this episode for the link.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Agency Toolkit Podcast. I'm your host, Julia McLaughlin, and today I have Ryan Blay here with me, and he is the CEO of 910, which is a full-service agency located in Alberta, Canada. So today we're going to be chatting a little bit about Ryan's journey of, you know, how he's helped grow 910, some challenges that he's had to overcome along the way. And yeah, I'm excited to have a really great conversation. So thanks so much for joining us today, Ryan.
Yeah, thank you, Julia. And it's always great to sort of push our way through tech stumbles and be able to connect across distances and have great conversations about the stuff that we do every day in our agencies.
Yes, we had some epic tech stumbles trying to connect for this initial podcast. So, but we're all good now. We're good to go. So I'd love to know, you know, what was your journey like of how you got into digital marketing and then what led you to joining 910?
Yeah, so it's an interesting story, at least from my perspective. I used to be a professional athlete on the Canadian ski team. I was those aerialists. You ski down, you do the flips and the twists and you land.
Yeah.
And so my era was the two Olympic quadrennials of 2006 and 2010. And if you just remember when social media came online, you know, Twitter launched the month after the 2006 Olympics. By the time 2010 came around, Twitter and Facebook were primary social media giants, even in their early years. But there was not a lot of athletes that were effectively creating an online presence. So I was an early adopter, and long and short, I learned how to use Twitter. I learned how to use Facebook and Friendster and all of the other, you know, SoundCloud and all of the other sort of platforms that were out there. And I built my own website. Remember, Apple used to have a website builder called iWeb. I built a website on iWeb. Mm-hmm. And long and short, I accidentally learned how to brand myself. I created an athletic persona called Air Blay. I started creating content across all these platforms, and I effectively found a way to go around the traditional media to get my message out there for my sponsors, for the media, etc. And what's really interesting is going into the 2010 Olympics, Facebook and Twitter, but Facebook predominantly was there in a strong way, and they were working with the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, and up until 2010, there was a very specific rule that did not allow it, precluded athletes from being able to share their own story while at the games. Those were sponsor rights. You were not allowed to do that. And so Facebook, working with the IOC, basically carved out the ability for athletes to report on their own story at the Olympics using media channels. So what happened was I was one of the athletes. I ended up being an alternate athlete in 2010 at those games because of some injuries. So I was uniquely on the sides, on the sidelines, which was not great as an athlete, but it gave me more time to just share my story on social media. So Facebook reached out to me. It was actually Randi Zuckerberg, and I hung out with her. She was the director of marketing at the time. We hung out for 3 days with the Facebook crew. She was really keen on, you know, growing Facebook and social media within the athletic domain. And sort of the takeaway is at the end, you know, she encouraged me to, you should move down to Palo Alto and come help us build out the, Facebook working with different professional sports teams, which is common now. Facebook has a relationship with the NHL and the Major League Baseball and the Olympics, etc. But these were the early days of that. So anyways, long story short, I was like, no, listen, I'm still I'm moving back to Canada, but she gave me some parting words, which were really insightful. She said, listen, what you're doing as an athlete here, you've created an online persona, you've established an online presence, you're creating great content, you're using all of these platforms. Go teach other businesses how to do that when you retire. So that was how, I retired from sport in 2011, I started a social media consultancy called Go Social, which is like, you know, an active verb, like Go Social companies. It was invitation for them to join this new Web 2.0 era. So that was what I did. I basically taught companies how to use social media. And mostly it was content strategy. Some of it was helping them get established with their platforms, teaching them this, at the time, this completely new sort of platform. It was sort of changing the way businesses can, you know, create relationships with their customers, all the stuff that we all know. About 2 years in to that, I sort of hit a ceiling in terms of what I could do because I was a sole proprietor. I would both sell and do the production. And at the time too, this is back in the days of Facebook where you could actually build app experiences within Facebook tabs. And the software I was using was called ShortStack. And you could build interactive contesting and promotions. You could fan gate your content, all this sort of stuff. But it became very clear that my companies needed more than just social media. So it became clear I needed to grow a team, and I also needed to do websites, and I also needed graphic design, and I also needed traditional marketing. There was the leading agency in my region called 910, which had the opposite need. They needed to learn how to do social media and mobile. I also did mobile app development. Long story short, we merged, and that was in 2012. And through the merger, I became one of three owners at 910. Fast forward to a year ago, I bought out those owners, and then I went through another merger and I merged with my number one competitor in the market, who was a similar agency to us. They did websites, they did branding, they did print, whereas they specialize more in the print. 910 proper, before this merger, we also have a digital marketing training academy. So I've sort of grown through merger acquisition, and I came to the agency space through a pretty unique way. I think it's a unique story. It's kind of a different way to come at it. And now we're I'm sort of backing away from that full service distinction. We are a little bit more narrow in what we do now. And basically we develop brands for companies, small, medium businesses, but very importantly, we teach them how to use and activate their brands. We put everything into Canva. We also build websites, no different than, you know, most agencies, WordPress websites, but we use tools like Elementor on the back end to make a visual drag and drop interface. So it's like, hey, Julia, if I'm building a website for you, I want you to be able to build, to manage your own website. We back that all up with our training academy. We've partnered with the Digital Marketing Institute, so they're the global leader in digital marketing training. So our prop is for small, medium businesses is let's not overcomplicate your brand and website. Let's build and develop them in a way such that we can train you how to activate that. Through our training academy, we're trying to empower small, medium businesses to do more in-house with their staff resources at $35 an hour as opposed to $160 an hour agency fee.
Interesting. Okay. So is your goal to continue to build the academy then? And then you can just it'll be kind of like a self-serve model.
Yeah. So that's interesting. We're now kind of getting into the business model side of it. So, the training academy, alongside with websites, there's, you know, the one-time fee to do the program, one-time fee to build the website, but then there's a monthly recurring fee to join the community for continual professional skills development, access to our coaching calls, additional support. So the training academy, from business model perspective, has both one-time revenues, but as well as builds out our monthly recurring revenue. In the same way that websites will have monthly recurring revenue through hosting. And we're looking for opportunities to build monthly recurring revenue on top of our branding. So when we do a visual brand guide, the additional support would be, you know, additional graphic design support to continue to support them and develop out templates, graphic assets in Canva, which is the tool that they would be able to use because they're not graphic designers, but Canva is such a powerful tool. And then the other part of this is there's a natural flow in a perfect world where let's start at the starting line, let's build a brand, get you established online, and get you in the training academy to teach you how to activate, drive, you know, pump the prime the pump, whatever analogy you want.
Yeah.
But it's very common that small businesses will come to us for the agency, but then through the training and the education, they'll deeply understand that their website is not well suited. It's not structured such that they will maximize their search engine presence on Google, or they can't do branded marketing because they don't have a brand. So it is common for them to be in the training academy and then to go backwards to fix, you know, address issues they have with their brand or their web presence. But I will plant a flag and say, listen, you've done some things out of order. Let's get you in the training academy. Don't be surprised for you to learn that you're probably going to want to go and address that website or add e-commerce or maybe focus on creating some better content so we can increase your presence on search engines against your competitors, you know, something like that. So that's kind of our goal. We're really trying to educate and empower them. But there's always a feeling of, I would never recommend that they try to brand themselves or build their own website. But should they be able to work with and activate their website and their brand? Yes. And in fact, I think increasingly, if you don't have those internal capabilities, you will forever be in a bad position where it's too expensive to have agencies do it for you. And if you're not doing it or you're doing it in a fragmented way, you're not getting the results you need. So hope it's an honest, you know, business model and conversation with our clients. We're really trying to empower them. And I want to move away from this model where our clients are becomes dependent on us. I'm trying to break the dependency. And so some of my peers will say, that's a dangerous business model. You're teaching your clients how to fish. Yeah, we're teaching our clients how to fish.
Yeah. It's so interesting, though. It's I love that you're just I think having that transparency and that willingness to support them as well is going to create loyal customers as well. So I think it's a really unique model that you guys are doing. So it's I'm excited for you guys.
Yeah. So and you know a lot of this is. To a certain degree been slowed down or disrupted in good ways. We just 8 months ago, something like that, I just merged with my number one competitor that was Image Design. So Marcus Vanstone was the owner of Image Design. He's now my business partner, two partners, 50-50. And so there's a lot of work of just bringing the business together. We also, there's lots of challenges with staffing and resourcing and systems and software and pricing. So the first year of the merger is really just sort of getting the ship under control and, you know, developing the new agency, right? And so that's kind of happening in the background as well as we're developing this new business model. This new business model was a reaction to COVID. The Training Academy, the one division that I spoke to there, is we developed that at the start of COVID. And we developed that in partnership with our municipalities, with the city and the county, and with our provincial chambers of commerce as well, which from a business model perspective, our training academy is endorsed by the Alberta Chambers of Commerce.
They become very
a channel partner.
Amazing.
So we can market our programming through, there's some 20,000 businesses that are registered chamber members in our province.
Wow.
And the other thing that we've done really aggressively is, again, this is related to COVID. I call it helicopter money. The government is just dropping money all over the place with strings attached. Examples would be there's a federal program, the Canada Digital Adoption Program. There's lots of different buckets of money within that. But if you're a business that needs to transition to e-commerce, you can get a $2,400 micro grant to pay for that. Perfect. So I help clients unlock that. It indirectly becomes revenue for us when we help them with that.
Yeah, that's smart.
And our training academy specifically qualifies for the Canada Alberta Job Grant, which will subsidize. It'll pay for between 66 and 100%. So it's crazy. So my discussion again with my clients is, listen, the cost is pretty much a non-issue because of the funding available. So then the question becomes, are you ready to significantly invest in your digital literacy? And more importantly, or as importantly, do you have an internal staff member that's ready to take up that charge? If you do, we can train them. And we may have to go in backwards and address some of your foundational. You don't have a brand, you don't have a website. But if they have a commitment to transition to digital and they want to be a modern 2023 business that has a strong web presence and they want to know how to do digital marketing, we can teach them and the government will pay.
I love that. So cool. And then so what are your plans to acquire new students for your coaching programs, for the academy, I should say?
Yeah, so the Academy has opened us up to more aggressively focus on generating leads and prospective customers through the province of Alberta. And we predominantly do that through our channel partners. So that would be in co-promotion with the Alberta Chambers of Commerce. You know, on a monthly basis, we will create content and do social media posts that will tag them or they'll reshare to their social channels, to their blog, to their network. We also are in partnership with, so for those listeners who don't know, the Chambers of Commerce is sort of like the formal lobby group that represents business interests for small, medium businesses. So that is our target audience. But we also partner with the Community Futures, which is, again, a provincial organization that helps predominantly startups, small and medium businesses as well. So again, we have some partnerships with them where we can, you know, acquire potential students for our training academy through that. And then another organization within the province, Business Link, which is, again, powered by the government. Its sole focus is on helping small, medium businesses get established and thrive. And so we come by students through those mechanisms. So channel partnership is really a big part of it.
That's
cool. And then we also do our own content on social media, and we blog. And as it is, you know, it's really tough. You would know this, Julia. Just because we have the knowledge and the expertise to create all this great content, it does not necessarily mean we have the time. So we're just as guilty as, you know, the shoe salesman who is walking around on an old pair of shoes. So we teach businesses how to do all of this stuff, but I have very honest conversations of, just because you have the knowledge and the skill does not necessarily mean you have the resource time to do that. So that becomes one of the additional challenges that we help them to walk through, because we have those own challenges ourselves as an agency.
Yeah, absolutely. So interesting. And then, so what would you say are some things you've learned along the way for maintaining happy clients who are hopefully going to, you know, bring in referrals for you?
Yeah, so we're not very great at creating programs and initiatives to spur our happy clients to generate referrals. So that's something that I'm thinking about. We do get referrals, but just by happenstance of those being great clients that, you know, think of referring, but I don't have any formal programs that would, you know, maybe accelerate that to happening. So I just wanted to sort of, you know, mention that. I don't think we do a great job at that front, but keeping customers happy, I think it's high touch. So examples, invoices go out and they're personalized, and they tend to go out from one of the owners. Could I have an administrator send invoices? Yes, and we do sometimes, but I always want to have a personalized message, a little bit of context, invite some testimonials at that point. We all typically would ask for testimonials at launch, you know, that kind of thing. But I over the 10 or so years I've been doing this, my staff, generally the creative staff, have been younger millennials. They tend to, as a characteristic, avoid phone calls and don't want in-person meetings. And so I used to have a poster in the office that said, call the client. If we have an issue and we're now 2, 3, 4 email exchange about one item, they're probably confused. They're probably getting frustrated. Pick up the phone, speak to them.
Yes. Yes.
So it's a little bit old fashioned. And I know now everything's becoming more digital, communicating over support boards and Slack and chat and text even. I really want us to be able to call the client. Now, COVID has done us a few favors. Our clients are now very used to working with Zoom or Teams or Google Meet. And so we'll actually do, like you and I right now, we're talking, but I can see you. You can see me. This makes for a more personable phone call.
Yes.
Meeting. And so I heavily, heavily encourage that. We also now have incorporated a video tool. There's lots out there. The one we use is Loom. When I send out quotes or support request issues, or if my team's working with sending a proof for a branding or whatever, we will very often include a video, just a link to a video. And then now they read the email, but then there's a personalized video overview with a screen share describing, here's the website, here's the changes we've made, check when you hover over here, look at all those cool functionality, whatever. And it creates a better experience. Our clients are wowed by it, but it reduces the number of revisions on work as well. So it's actually, it becomes a productivity and efficiency tool, as well as a customer service retention tool as well.
Interesting. And it was interesting when you mentioned, you know, doing the face-to-face video calls and the, you know, that added personalization, the benefits you're going to see. Because I was speaking to another agency owner not that long ago, and she said that she had team members who would sometimes do Zoom calls and they didn't always turn on their video. And she noticed, so she put something, you know, across the company wide saying like you had to turn on your video. And she said the amount of, you know, unhappy customers, she just noticed a big change agency wide in the happiness of their clients overall. So it's really interesting with just that one little aspect, the big change it can make.
So I won't name the company, but we're onboarding a new software right now, and it's a multi-month process, and we're getting training by the company for onboarding, and they're mm-hmm. doing Zoom training, and there's a lot of screen sharing, but our cameras are on, my team's camera is on, their team mm-hmm. has their camera off, and it's frustrating, and it's it feels unequal, and so now there's been occasions where all of a sudden my team, we're turning our cameras off. I'm like, why are we doing this? Can't you turn your camera on? And the response is, we don't have webcams. Like, is that a real response, or are you're investing in this online training? Get a webcam.
Yeah.
You know? And so, yeah. It's a rule. Unless the client requests camera off, we'll go camera off. But as a general rule, camera on. That's the benefit of Zoom. If you're going camera off, just take it to phone. Well, maybe you're doing a screen share. I don't know. So, It's just an interesting point. I'm hovering on that because I feel that sometimes there is a certain etiquette or just norms that somehow get thrown out the window the moment we digitize something. I used to, when I had Go Social, and I did a lot of, we still do a lot of social media training, content strategy, how to navigate the news feed and all this. And I would sort of use this analogy. Imagine if you walked into a real world networking events for a chamber mixer or something like that, and you saw mm-hmm. a congregation of 15 people talking, and you just walked into the middle of that, interrupted everyone, started handing out your business cards, and started talking about yourself. You would never do that. You would never do that. You would get shunned, and you would have the intuition that that's just so faux pas. But the next day, you would definitely be like, I'm going to join this Facebook group. I'm not going to listen. I'm just going to start promoting myself and talking about my services. And so it's kind of the same thing. It's this digital networking opportunity, but people just get into shouting mode and they get really self-centered and egocentric. And I think that's changed and improved quite a bit. But in the early days, that was happening. And it's really this, people need to understand the new medium and how do you operate in digital versus real world. And I do some of the same decorum rules apply. And if we're on Zoom, I think video is important. Certainly if the other one's on video, you should be as well.
Yeah, I was reading an article not that long ago that was interesting, but the trust rate decreases when you have one of those automated backgrounds that show up. Yeah, because like, you don't know what's behind there. Like, are you sitting in like a cluttered guest bedroom? Like you don't know.
So yeah, I have to confess I have that intuition as well. I'm a little bit suspicious. So sometimes if it's done really well, I'm like, That person is, so for example, we have green screens, and mm-hmm. when I do that, it looks professional and most people wouldn't even notice. But if they notice it, it's a professional background, it's green screen, there's great lighting, we have a great mic, it's all good. Other times I'm like, what are you hiding? Are you a basement type person? Are you a real company? Are there other people in the background that I can't see? I don't generally have those suspicions, but depending on, I could definitely imagine a client having those reservations if they're wondering, if they're seeing, especially when you see it done really, really poorly. At least now, instead of the green screen that's done really, you know, the fake beach behind you that the palm tree keeps disappearing into your hair, that's no good. But I think something that's a little bit more tasteful now is just that blur background. So it's like, you can see they're in an office, but at least it's blurred. I actually prefer that. I think that's a little bit classier.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think it's something to just be aware of anyway. I actually had a meeting one time, and the woman I was meeting with had a filter on that had lipstick, and the lips were floating around the screen when she was moving.
Anyone listening to this, there's a famous video going around Instagram, TikTok. It's like a congressional hearing or something like that. And it's these old 65, 7-year-old men, they're about to deliver a statement it's lawyers or something like that. And one of the old men has a cat filter on, and And then the video proceeds to the one old guy telling the other, I think you have a filter on. You look like a cat right now. You have to, and he's trying to guide him through. He's like, oh, I don't know how to do it. And he ends up saying, I can't figure it out. Let's just proceed in this very formal setting. And he's got a cat filter. His face looks like a cat. It's hilarious.
Oh so, my gosh. So funny.
Yeah. So actually that's just a little side note. So, I just want to tie this back actually to our training academy. Our training academy is not predominantly, it is delivered virtually. So our coaching calls are on Zoom. Our mm-hmm. learning management system is a virtual, platform. We have a private Facebook group, and we teach our students how to use video and all of this sort of stuff. So what ends up being a added benefit of our training academy is, yes, you're learning about email marketing and search engine optimization and website, this, that, the other, whatever. But there's just a general tech literacy that is significantly improved upon, that the students learn a lot about that as well. Sorry, I'm hearing my phone in the background. I'll turn that off.
Sure, so, no problem.
Yeah, there's a lot of stumbles in this new tech space, and especially through COVID, companies had no choice but to adopt all of this technology, and of course some of them continue to struggle through that. So our training academy has a added accidental benefit of also significantly increasing the digital literacy of our businesses we're working with as well.
Very cool. And then, so what is the name of your academy?
So we just call it the 9-10 Bootcamp, but okay. the curriculum is the curriculum of the Digital Marketing Institute. So they're the global leader in creating this content. They have an advisory board that audits and updates this content quarterly. These are companies like MailChimp, Google, Facebook, IBM. So it's the top content in the world. And in North America, it gets it's backed by the American Marketing Association as well. So we have 13 short courses and 5 professional certifications. So you might have to take a short course on e-commerce or a short course on social media selling on LinkedIn, a short mm-hmm. course on email marketing. Or you might take a professional certification, which is either a 6-month or a year-long program. There's different programs. So that's their curriculum that we license mm-hmm. and deliver. We have to have the subject matter experts to be able to deliver and support that content.
Yep.
But then we create a learning community, which becomes, of course, our recurring revenue model as well. And in that learning community, we have coaches, subject matter experts, weekly coaching calls. And then we also add in curriculum that is not represented by the DMI curriculum. So they have lots of great content around digital marketing, PPC, SEO, that kind of stuff. But they don't have any content related to design. So we have Canva training. We have like design mm-hmm. school, basically. And we do a lot of content related to branding, understanding your brand, and establishing your target audience and establishing your keywords and sort of all of the aspects that fall under what I call branding with a capital B, which really is honestly part of your business model as well.
Very cool. So I know that you are empowering small businesses to, you know, take the reins and, you know, really work to build their own marketing through your courses. With the professional certification courses, is that something that, you know, an agency owner could, you know, have their team members be taking courses through you guys as well to kind of, you know, just do internal training for them?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. The answer is yes. I would think most agency principals would say, why would we want to train our competitors? I don't take that view. I have had other agencies that have inquired about having their staff go through our training. The answer is mm-hmm. yes. Even if they were local direct competitors, we would do that.
Yeah.
Partly that's my collaborative spirit. I merged with my number one competitor. We were first competitors, but friendly competitors, right? So I think there's more juice when you collaborate than when you compete. So the other thing is pretty common. We haven't done this yet, but other agencies that are in this training space, for example, they would provide training to their HR people that are in recruiting. Because very commonly, when HR people that are recruiting specific skill sets around marketing and communication and digital, they don't really know how to vet them. So we have some short courses. For example, we have a short course called Digital Marketing Essentials. It's meant for HR people or owners or managers. It does not provide them the training, the tactical, to be able to execute, but it gives them an overview of the digital landscape. It gives them the lexicon. It helps them to understand how to have conversations with and to guide their team. So if you imagine you're an owner or a manager, and you have to direct the marketing team, and they're talking about a bounce rate or open rate in email marketing, or let's create a funnel, all of this jargon, they don't understand it. And so we have some short courses that are really meant to just increase the digital literacy to be able to participate in conversations. And then we have a whole set of curriculum, which is, no, you're the one who's going to be doing the work. We have to teach you how to tactically do the work in the trenches, as well as understand the theory.
Very cool. Awesome. I love that. And then, so what are your plans for 9-10? You know, where do you see yourself in 5 years' time?
Yeah, in 5 years' time, as I mentioned, COVID has done a few favors to our industry, which has made it easier for us to work with clients digitally. We were always able to do that, but our clients didn't want to work that way.
Yeah.
So in my role, I typically have led sales and business development. And one of the downsides of that role is it's always required physical in-person meetings traditionally. Mm-hmm. And I'm living in Grand Prairie, Alberta. So our trade area has been limited by the requirement of meeting clients in person. So I could have an extended sales force and people in different markets. That's changed significantly over the last 5 years. It's changed hyper significantly since COVID. I now will sell a $15,000 website to a oil field company over Zoom. That would have never happened. Never
yeah.
would that have happened 5 years ago. But that's a regular thing now. So what that does is it frees both up myself and my business partner to, in principle, continue to manage the website potentially virtually and not necessarily in our home market. So that then also extends to our staff as well. So we're becoming more of a company that is not focused so much on a narrow geographic region, but a mm-hmm. wider geographic region first with the province. And then they'll give the flexibility for me to necessarily travel more, to work remotely, to have more flexibility, less chained to a physical location. So that's a big part of what I think will be significantly different in 5 years.
Yep.
It's already, we've made some of those changes. And then I think probably getting much narrower in terms of who we our target clients are. So right now it's small, medium businesses within the province of Alberta, but that's a pretty wide swath. There's retail in there, there's professional services, there's e-commerce, there's not-for-profits. And I think once we get really good at developing brands and websites and training for certain companies, we'll look at which ones did we best serve and really narrow into that. And so it could be, for example, retail or retail companies that are focused on e-commerce, or it could be professional services. So that's one thing I think about, is just, getting a little bit more narrow in our positioning.
Yep.
Really the other thing that I think about is, it's actually tied to your question. Could another agency send their staff to train with us? The answer to that is yes, because of our collaborative mindset. And so the other thing I think about is, imagine a website agency in Red Deer or Lethbridge. So they will have the same problem that we used to have as a traditional agency. You build a website, you give it to the client, they don't know what to do with it. It ends mm-hmm. up just resting on its laurels and it underperforms.
Yeah.
But yet they can't pay the agency to manage it for them. And so they just don't really actively managing their website. It doesn't work for them. Same thing with an agency in Edmonton that does a beautiful brand, visual brand guide. They hand it off to the clients and then the company doesn't know what to do with it. So I imagine a relationship whereby those agencies view us as collaborators, and they encourage their companies to, once they've built the foundation, come learn how to activate it through our training academy. Right. And so yeah. where that becomes a bit of a challenge is that we are indirectly competing with them, because I also have divisions that do branding and websites. So I need to think, long and hard about how do I make that collaborative relationship whereby if I do have a business that's in our training academy in Red Deer, and if that business has a preference to work with a local Red Deer agency for marketing or websites, that we refer them through our network, right? And then they can go and, you know, they come to us for the training academy, but if they have a local provider for web or brand, I relinquish that lead, because it's the thing you need to do to foster that collaborative ecosystem.
Awesome. So yeah, that's really exciting that you guys are going to be expanding the area that you're going to be serving, and then having more of that collaborative approach as well with who you're going to be working with. So very exciting things to be looking forward to.
Yeah, you betcha. I'm looking forward to it as well. Of course, it's the entrepreneurial journey. And I was remembering also, I think you had 5 hotwire questions. Is that what you call them?
I do, yes. So we're actually just ready to move on to those. So yeah, I've got the 5 rapid fire questions for you, the fast 5.
So fast 5, there it is.
First question, what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
I'm a voracious reader. There's lots of them, but I would say maybe Joseph Campbell, The Hero's Journey. That probably opened the door for me to the archetypal journey of the hero. But then that really sprung me into Carl Jung and sort of the theory of archetypes. And so when I think about branding as a branding agency, I think archetypes go a long way in helping our clients to understand and personify their brands. So I think archetypes are, there's a lot of attention paid to them right now. I think many agencies are doing brand archetype, they're doing archetype exercises poorly. But yeah, Joseph Campbell. And you know, for those that don't know him, Google him. And every great story, whether it's Star Wars or Die Hard 2, it's the story of the hero, and it's the archetypal story, and it's just really, really great stuff.
Awesome. It's a great recommendation. And what does your morning routine look like?
My morning routine is inconsistent. It's something that I need to get better at. The only thing I can say is consistent in my morning routine is coffee. But then if I sort of think about, you know, I don't have this really written down anyway. It's just become my organic routine. I will start my day by scanning my inbox. I try to end the day as close as possible to inbox 0. I don't typically get there by the morning. I get something like 250 emails a day. This is partly because so many system emails from the different companies and support, et cetera. So I do a pretty good job of having different filters and folders that put them away. So I will start the morning with generally a scan or an audit of my inbox. Mm-hmm. I will then look to my to-do list, the things that I didn't accomplish from the day before, to see if there's any, you know, urgent things that need my time. Mm-hmm. And then I typically will do a bit of a check-in with team members as well. So, you know, I'm not in the, my role is not in the position where I'm doing any of the production. So really I'm just scanning agency-wide, what are all of the functions of the agency, who needs to be communicated, what things are stuck, who needs support, are there anything that needs my attention? And then from there, then my day looks significantly different each day. The one thing I probably don't do a great job of right now is I'm a slave to whatever pulls me in a little bit. I, instead of time blocking, you know, Tuesdays are for these activities, Wednesdays are for I have mapped that out. I have previously been effective at time blocking and creating certain themes for days, but the merger took that upside down. With the merger, there's just so many new things that are just one-time issues with the lawyers or the accountants or whatever, and you've got to deal with them. So the last year has not been my normal routine.
Gotcha. Okay. And then is there a CEO that you follow or study?
Yeah. So there's a CEO in the U.S. His name is Greg Hickman. He has a new podcast called Becoming CEO. He also does coaching and mentorship. Our agency has previously engaged him. When we were creating our digital marketing training academy, we hired his company to teach us how to create a business model around this sort of space. And he's just a, you know, a great mentor. And also David C. Baker and Blair Enns. I wouldn't call them CEOs, but they're, say, thought leaders, to use that buzzword. And I follow most of their content, and I do a lot of podcasting as well. I listen to a lot of content just in my downtime.
Awesome. And what is your favorite online tool?
Probably that Loom, L-O-O-M. It's that video tool.
I love Loom.
Yeah. So it's great. I've, I very effectively use it when I'm quoting out a $15,000 website. There's no way I'm going to send that without a Loom overview of a personalized message. Here's all the things we talked about. I'll go on screen. I'll walk them through the quote. Our team now does that for support as well. There's lots of tools we use, but that one's the one that I say when we onboarded, it made the most significant difference in terms of maybe customer experience.
Awesome. And last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
Yes, that's such a tough question, right? I think I noticed that I was generally pretty strong on the soft skill sets and not so strong on the harder skill sets of business, numeracy and understanding your financial reports and understanding cash flow and your balance sheet and liabilities and assets, all that sort of stuff. So I did address that fairly early on. I went and got an undergrad and then later on got my master's. But when I first started my company, I had no idea how bookkeeping worked, and I couldn't even read my own financial reports. And yeah, I made it through, but many businesses fail. And I think I probably would have wanted someone to twist my rubber arm and really, Ryan, I know you think you're good on the soft skill set. Don't lean on those too hard. I'm not saying you have to be an expert on, you know, the finance side, but go learn some of the fundamentals. I think that's probably what I would recommend to business owners. You have to know your numbers.
Yeah, that's really great advice.
Yeah, and awesome. Now I can blindfolded recite all of the most important numbers and KPIs and metrics for our company. 10 years ago, I didn't even understand them.
Right. Yeah. Awesome. Well, Ryan, it has been a pleasure to have you on the show today. I've really enjoyed learning about your journey of, you know, how you've grown 910, your agency. So thank you so much for joining me for today's episode.
Yeah, I appreciated our conversation. Can't wait to share it when it goes live.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast. And we'll see you next time.